Is your business struggling? Do you need a custom business plan to get ahead? All you need to do is ask Sharifa, the premier business consultant who is focused on your success. From digital marketing to business planning, I bring over 25 years of experience to work for you. As a host of three different talk shows, I can get you connected to your audience right away. Visit AskSharifa.com for more information. Do not face the unknown alone.
Good morning, good morning, good morning. And thank you for joining me on today's episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I am your host, Sharifa Hardy, and I have prepared an amazing show for you today. Tune in because you will be taking notes by the end of the show. But before we get started introducing our guests, I'm going to ask you to do what I always ask you to do, and that is to go out and be an evangelist for the show. Text somebody, tweet somebody, inbox somebody, go to your LinkedIn, spread the message, share this show. We are live with information that might just change your life. So while you're sharing the show, I'm going to go ahead and introduce our first guest. And if you're someone who has been tuning into the show, especially on Monday mornings, you are definitely going to recognize her. She is a chameleon. That's right. Every Monday, she provides us with a different aspect, a different approach, a different angle, a different product for her business. She has the unique ability to recreate herself time and time again. I want to go ahead and introduce Miss Allison Allman, the organization maven. Good morning, Allison. How are you?
Good morning, Sharifa. Good morning, all of our followers and our watchers and people on the replay.
You are so excited at like 8 o'clock in the morning on Monday. What's going on? What's so exciting?
It's always my favorite time of the day on Mondays. It's the beginning of the week. It's the beginning of the day. I get to meet 3 to 4 new people for networking. It's the best part, best time. That's why I sign up for this.
Absolutely. Now, I prepared a question for you for today. And I know you will know. People are having so many different discussions on Halloween, what to do, where to go, what to celebrate, what to make it unique, what's the best way to do it versus with social distancing. What is the word on the street, Allison? What are people doing?
Well, I know a lot of people have a lot of mixed feelings. There's a lot of just, I guess, social media shame happening and the election and all the everything that's going on. So what's going on for people in Southern California is they're still doing activities. They're still going to pumpkin patches and they're still going to fall activities of apple picking, raspberry picking, all that kind of stuff. They're wearing their masks and they're doing the 6 feet apart. A lot of places have added picnic benches, and the picnic benches are about 6 to 10 feet apart for the parks, for apple picking and so forth. And there's quite a few people getting really creative with porch decor and doing pictures on their porch of their kids on their porch, and like scavenger type hunts on their house, where they aren't necessarily going to have trick-or-treat going on in the front of the house, but they're going to have it in their backyard, where they're inviting a few safe neighbors that they've been exposed to all this time. And they're having carnivals in their backyard. They're having scavenger hunts. They're having that. So they're not necessarily in our area. I'm not sure how it is across the U.S., but in our area, if the police sees a group of people walking on the street trick-or-treating, they're going to get ticketed. So a lot of people are staying home and going, either having events in their backyard, or they're being invited by a neighbor to someone's backyard, or they're going to official trunk-or-treats that are being put on by stores or churches, and everyone is flocking to that and then practicing social distancing. That's what I've seen. That's what the talk's been the best month.
You always have the best information. You always know what is going on. Now, have you done any organizing for Halloween? Like, have people made any special garage showcases? Have you put anything together like that?
Well, on Saturday, We had a gal that got all of her Christmas down last year, and then she hurt her arm, so she never actually put any of it up. It just made it to the garage floor from the attic. And so we actually put it back in the attic because I promised to be back in middle of November to bring it all down with her again and get it all decorated. We did put some Christmas stuff out that was really heavy. And we mixed it in with her Halloween decor. It was quite funny. They're the three wise men that are out of stone, but she's going to put some cobwebs on them and make them. But mostly what I'm doing is helping people get Halloween down from all of the different parts of the house that it is. No one's actually been able to let me decorate for them. Quite a few people are decorating their backyard, so they are doing that kind of on their own time. And whatnot. I haven't done any porch decors. That was a couple of years ago where I'd go around and actually set up a porch decor where I would bring the merchandise and bring the decor, and then I would set it up for them, and then I would take it home and store it so they didn't have another thing to store. But that idea didn't get very far. Everyone liked using their own stuff but just couldn't get it out, so I'm like, okay, I'll get it out for you, and then they did it their own way. So it's just a great idea that never got fully developed. But my porch has been zip tied to all my plants and decorated. I decorated some more last night. I bought some more garland and put it around just different bookcases in my house.
So you do more of assistance after Halloween than prior. So after we put up all these elaborate decorations and now they have to go back in their box, I don't want to do the work. I can pick up the phone and call Allison Allman, the organization maven, correct?
Correct. I'll put it all away and then I'll make room for it in the garage so it's all together. So that next year you're not like, where did that go? And oh, I didn't know I had this many sets of lights, because I'm gonna have all the lights together, so, you know? And so then it makes it easier to find it again for the next year. And a lot of times when I'm organizing it, I'm saying, hey, this is torn, let's get rid of it. Hey, this looks really frazzled, let's get rid of it. Hey, this looks like it's ancient, how long have you had this? Oh, I now I need to throw it out, but I always forget. Great, at the back of my truck, we'll just put it in the back of my truck, it's done. So that's a lot what happens with the holidays, is I go through it before I put it all away, and then I'll put all those big blow up things together and label them so that people know, you know, where all their blow-ups are and stuff. I don't know yet about Christmas what's going to happen. We're having controversy here about how we can't have Thanksgiving, so I'm not sure how Christmas is going to pan out and how much decorating people are going to do, because if people can't come over to their house to see how festive their house is for Christmas or open gifts or whatever, people might not be going all out this year. I'm kind of just waiting to hear what's happening.
Yes, we all are waiting to see what's happening and what's going on in the world. So I'm going to come back to you, Allison, but I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest. And we were talking about the air and what's going on and what people are feeling and what people are thinking. And there are a lot of people who, for this time, especially the holiday times, it can be very stressful. Our next guest, Ms. Amy Deramus, helps people with what they're going through. She is a clinical psychologist who specializes in mental illness. And we're going to talk about her book, Understanding Bipolar Disease, The Essential Family Guide. Good morning, Amy. How are you?
Good. Thank you for having me on the show.
You are so welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, happy to. Excited.
When did you write your book?
This was actually a contract I signed like right before quarantine started. Mm-hmm. So I basically spent the spring writing the book and the summer editing it. And then it came out in September.
Okay, wonderful. Because I didn't know it. Things tend to be different, whether it's pre-COVID, mm-hmm. you know, during COVID, because what have you seen during this time frame, and what are you seeing now, especially like one of the things that Allison mentioned, I'm sorry, about the holiday time. What are you seeing?
I don't have to tell you guys that this is unlike anything any of us have ever lived through. And so people aren't really sure what to do with it. So one of the biggest things that I've been thinking a lot about lately is the number of people that are experiencing things like depression or anxiety in a really severe way for the first time. And, you know, clinically, we're used to thinking of those as disorders. Mm-hmm. It's a diagnosis and you go to therapy, you take your meds, whatever. But around this time, it is really, really important to remember that they can also be normal ways to feel when so many bad things are going on. So the first thing I want people to know is that you know, if you are experiencing these things for the first time, you know, yeah, there's help, there's meds, there's therapy, there's community. And we can't underestimate community and mental health, but this does not mean that you yourself have something wrong with you. It means you're responding in a very natural way to the amount of stress and the amount of loss that you've had. As far as the holidays, my clients and also other people I know, one of the biggest things that's stressing them out is the conflict around it, because you can have a family where everybody's all over the map as far as social distancing. Some people want to just go ahead and have the big family blowout and hope for the best. Other people, you know, privately would really rather stay home this time and be safe and maybe just have their own household or even be by themselves so nobody gets sick, and everywhere in between. So, you know, up until now, for a lot of people, loneliness has been the biggest problem, but now it is shifting to family conflicts that are getting very, very personal. And so families figuring out, you know, very consciously how they're going to sort out these conflicts and deal with all the views and expectations is going to be, I think, a very big issue the next few months.
Do you have any recommendations on handling? Because I agree. I have a friend of mine specifically who has been dealing with the whole mask, no mask, you know, whether she can see the grandkids. Now she can't see the grandkids. You know, she has different children. The parents are raising, you know, the grandkids different. Some of her kids will allow her to see the grandkids. Some of them are like, no. So she hasn't seen them for months. So it is definitely difficult for families at this time.
Yeah. I would say, you know, this is getting very personal for people. People who are masking are taking it, you know, very personal and feeling some very real fear when they know that other family members aren't masking or social distancing, and the ones that aren't as strictly, you know, are feeling very targeted. And, you know, aside from the science behind all that, you know, find a way that respects everybody. The ones who want to get together and take the chance, you know, that's on them, but maybe also have, you know, some time scheduled in for Zooming, phoning with family members who aren't ready for that yet. So I think the biggest thing is maybe people making an effort to put aside their own egos and respect where people are at. Mm-hmm. And find a way to include people on a level that's comfortable for that individual.
Yes. What about people who maybe have never in their lives experienced any signs of depression or anxiety? You know, they were living what many may consider average normal lives. Global pandemic hits. They don't know how to deal with it. They don't know how to deal with these family issues. These, you know, not even the family, just they go out, people are getting into fights in stores over whether they wear a mask or not. What are some of the things that people can do to handle this stress and this pressure?
There are a lot of things. One of the most important, if you don't mind, I'm just going to throw a little brain science in here. It'll be, you know, quick and simple, but a lot of people obviously are really, really scared right now. And certain things happen to you when you're scared, which is that very, very primitive parts of your brain take over, what you've heard called the fight or flight. So yeah, fights, breaking out, because so many people are in those fear parts of the brain right now, and that's the dominant part. And so there are different things you can do to kind of bring yourself back to a brain state where you're thinking, where you're able to handle your emotions. I talked about community earlier and relationships, and it's going to be really important, obviously, to keep up your sense of community and your relationships as much as possible. Any kind of a project that'll get you thinking, there's like this. So if the fear parts of your brain are way overactive, that automatically means that the thinking, creative parts of your brain are not as active. All the activity shifts to these primitive, keep me alive parts of the brain. And you need to do something to shift yourself back to like a thinking, creative part of the brain. Because the other thing that's in that thinking creative part of the brain, which is kind of right up here, is our ability to empathize. There's a very specific part of the brain that knows how to do empathy, that knows how to do love. And it's not a good match for the primitive keep me alive part of the brain. So to be able to empathize with people, to remember how much you love them, to be able to think straight, to be able to manage your emotions, creative stuff, any kind of art, music, any creative endeavor is going to reactivate that part of the brain, intellectual stuff, games, puzzles, projects, are going to reactivate those more sophisticated, more human, more thoughtful and empathetic parts of the brain. So really, you know, think about that passion project that maybe you've been putting off, or that art or creative process that you really love that you haven't been making time for. And probably part of the reason you haven't been making time for is if your brain's really anxious right now, it doesn't feel as if there's time for that. But, you know, if you make time, you'll find that it really does help.
Yes, actually, I think it's excellent advice. I want to come back to you, Amy, but I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest. And when Amy was speaking about just kind of being confident and not worrying during this time frame, it made me think of our next guest, Ms. Melissa Ruschuk, who is the founder of Dove and Dragon Publishing. But we're going to share not only what she's doing now, but her journey. Because like most of us in her 20s, she thought she had life figured out. Everything was planned out. And then life happened. We're going to share her story this morning. Good morning, Melissa. How are you?
Good morning. I'm thrilled to be here today.
I am thrilled to have you.
I understand the whole fight or flight survival mode. At 28, I had got very sick, ended up having 2 strokes and brain surgery.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I was pretty much in a wheelchair, couldn't talk, but I was talking Romanian, which was very funny because I don't speak it naturally.
Oh, wow.
But it took 3 years just to get back to walking normal, to have a 3rd stroke to talk English.
Oh, wow.
So understanding the fear and everything, the anxiety made some horrible decisions, but also led me on the path of the creative stuff that led me to opening my own company, which sadly is closing at the end of the month because I worked it out with a traditional publisher, took a position in a traditional publishing house, moved all of my authors over to a traditional publishing rather than a small indie publishing, which is much better for them. So it's continuing the journey, but giving me a little bit more freedom to be me.
What are some of the things that you're going to do now that you have the freedom to be you?
Finish my books. I have 2 works in progress that were supposed to be out beginning of the year. I finally got them into editing. Anyone that knows authors, edit 1 book is a nightmare. To edit 2 simultaneously is, what am I thinking?
A nightmare, I understand. Because you do all this editing, you get the book done, you get the book out, and you're so proud, all this work, and then someone's like, okay, well, you misspelled this word. I'm like, it's always that one thing that you forget. So I love it. I love the fact that you're publishing 2 books at the same time. So when you went through all of these tragedies that happened to you, your strokes, what made you decide to become a publisher? How did you get to that point of your life?
Oh, let's see. 2016, I wrote my first book. Mm-hmm. So I started off with a small press publisher. Mm-hmm. They closed within 90 days of signing me.
Oh, wow.
Went to another publisher. Then I worked into their director of marketing. And there was so much contention over things that I seen as a marketer that I wanted to do versus what I could do. Mm-hmm. So that led into, okay, I'm opening my own publishing house. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do it the way I see it. Okay, so it takes money. So it wasn't doing exactly what I wanted, but it gave me the premise of what needed to be done to be able to work with this publisher that I'm doing now.
So it was all a building block. It was just steps that you took to get to where you wanted to go. That's a beautiful thing. That's beautiful. I'm going to come back to you, Melissa. I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest. We've been talking to the lovely ladies. So now we're going to bring the gentleman into the show. After 25 years of personal development training, he is now a peak performance consultant, Mr. Anthony Drago. Good morning, Anthony. How are you? Anthony, you're on mute. Talk to me.
There we go. That's better. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. Everyone, I'm very happy to be on the show with everyone and share some knowledge.
Yeah. So what if I have to go prove something? Is that a good thing?
It is. And the title of the book, Go Prove Something, it's actually the name of my company as well. It's GPS Lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And what I realized, I've been working with basketball players for about 15 years, and I was teaching them about personal development and speed, agility, and quickness. Mm-hmm. And what I realized was that I was leaning more towards the mental aspect because I was seeing that they were taking what they were learning on the court and applying it to their lives off the court. Mm-hmm. So the go prove something is not so much to everybody else, but more so to yourself, because we're all out there trying to prove everything to everyone else, but we don't prove things to ourselves. So I think it starts with us.
Mm-hmm. I think that's beautiful, and it's one of the things that I live by and that I actually learned in high school from my favorite coach. I love Coach Bloom. He was amazing, but I still use this today. I ran cross country, and for people who know LA, we ran cross country in the mountains of Griffith Park. So when you run in a mountain, it's different from a track, because if you're bored, you're tired on a track, you just quit and walk across the track and you go home. When you're running in the mountain and you get halfway up the mountain, even if you turned around, it's still the same distance. You have to complete it. But our coach would always say, we take the bus, we get there, and every day he would give us the same boring exact speech. But he would tell us, he would say, you are not in competition with anyone but yourself. He said, take as much time as you need, but the bus leaves at 3. And that was it. And then we were off running, because he was like, you know, take your time, however you want. He was like, but if you're not back at 3 o'clock, we are out of here. So we still had to push ourselves. So I understand completely. What inspired you to go with the theme of go prove something?
Well, you know what is, I think of this. When you hear the term GPS, what do you think of? You think of navigating.
Or me lost, yes.
Exactly. You think of directions, turn by turn directions. You think of recalculation. You think of a starting point. You think of an ending point, a goal. So when you apply that to your life, your starting point is where you are right now in your life. Mm-hmm. The turn by turn directions is what I can provide based on what you're looking for. That's including setting your goals and where you want to go. And then the biggest part of navigation of anything is the recalculation. Because you say that a plane takes off and it's on course 5% of the time. 95% of the time, it's off course. It's just a matter of getting back on course. But most people get to that one thing and they turn around and go back. Imagine a pilot taking off, you know, from New York to San Diego, and 5 minutes in, they turn around because they went off course. So it doesn't make sense. So I'm looking at it like I can provide that GPS, that roadmap to where, from where you are to where you want to get to.
So what is this, a personal roadmap, a business career roadmap?
Well, it starts with personal, because, you know, Tony Robbins, I'm sure you guys are familiar with, but he had a great quote, and he said, when people fail in relationships, they want to know why they fail and why they're always attracting the same kind of person, whether it's personal or business. And what it comes down to is you're taking you with you into the new relationship. You're taking all that baggage that you've had from previous relationships, business or personal, and you're bringing it into your new relationship. So rather than leaving that outside the door, you're bringing that into it. So all those problems or issues that you had previously now fall into the new relationship. And that's why you're attracting the same people. You're looking for what you're comfortable with in your comfort zone, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. So what are some of the steps? If we read the book, I know we can't give all the information away, but what are some of the steps that someone can do to attract better things into their life?
Well, number one is you have to have a foundation. You know, the premise of the book is I use the backdrop of building a house to show you how to build your mind, your body, and your skills from the ground up. So the when you're building a house, doesn't matter how old you are, you know, it's a foundation. So you have to build that foundation. And it starts with, number one, your mind, your belief in yourself. Because if you don't believe in yourself, why would anyone else believe in you? Then it's your gratitude, being appreciative of what you already have and not just taking for granted what you do have. Mm-hmm. And then it's your desire for more. Because I believe, you know, Napoleon Hill in Think and Grow Rich said that desire is the starting point. I kind of look at it a different way, because how can you desire more if you don't appreciate what you already have? That's the foundation, I believe, of your mind, is the belief, the gratitude, and your desire for more.
I think that's beautiful. Amy, when you hear Anthony explain that, what are your thoughts?
I was just thinking about something we talk about with people who are in bad relationships or who consistently get into jobs that are bad for them and they want to know why. We have a tendency to walk a familiar road. Like, given a choice between a road that's bad but familiar, we know there's trouble down this road, but we know exactly how to manage it, and a road that's new and scary, and it might be so much better, but we're not 100% sure we can handle it. Most people without help will take the familiar road that they know is going someplace bad, and they might not be doing it consciously, but Anthony's absolutely right about that, that you have to put some conscious effort and really, you know, recognize that it's okay for you to feel some anxiety, that it's okay for you to have to learn some stuff and, you know, get some support around you if you are going to take that new road, because no matter how good it is, new is scary. Mm-hmm.
So it's more of the devil you know.
Exactly.
Yes, yes. Melissa, what are your thoughts when you hear Amy and Anthony?
Oh, I agree 100%. Personally, I just entered a new relationship during COVID, and it's completely opposite of every relationship, even family relationships, that I've ever known. And it scares the living daylights out of me because it's so new and so not what I'm accustomed to. We were having a conversation last night that goes slow with me because this is new ground for me. It's scary to me. Mm-hmm. But I have to break those boundaries within myself to move forward.
I think it's wonderful that you're able to verbalize that, though. I think so often people are unable to verbalize the fact that I need to go slow, that I am afraid, and they usually react in some kind of emotional way that may cause more harm than good to the relationship. You're nodding your head, Amy.
I just agree with what both of you are saying.
I had a great mentor, Antonia Teeb Smith and Brad Blazer, who have mentored me for self-help and business coaching and personal development. So with them, they have been helping me break down barriers that I never realized I built for myself.
Yes. So Anthony, Melissa talks about breaking down these barriers. She talks about her new relationship, being afraid. What are your thoughts on what Melissa had to say?
Well, I think that after I wrote my book, I kind of read it myself, and I went back and I said, you know what? I was like, I'm missing something. You know, I start off with the construction phase, so to speak, of the house, assuming that the planning was done and you had the blueprint. So I went back and I said, I need a blueprint to get to the construction phase. And that, what I think, is the one word, in my opinion, that can fix all the problems in the world today, from politics to race relations to relationships, is communication. You know, when we were speaking prior to the show, we were speaking about having conversations, right? We don't have conversations anymore. What happens is people generally are waiting for the other person to finish speaking so they can tell them why they're right and how their point is better. You know, you see it with the debates in politics. You see it with, you know, the fighting of the different races. No one is there with an open mind to listen. And I think that's the problem. People don't speak to each other with the intent of understanding. It's just to get through the conversation so they can make their point. And I think that's a problem. If you can sit down with people and basically explain to them what your point is, then you know what? Maybe they'll have a better understanding. They still might not agree with you, but the term, you know, disagree, I agree to disagree, doesn't exist anymore. Now it's I'm right, you're wrong. And if I'm wrong, if you're wrong, you're a racist, or if you're wrong, you're this person, you're fighting against this one. It doesn't make sense. And I just can't put my mind around it, how we can't just have conversations with each other.
Interesting point. Allison, do you have any response?
Well, not particularly to what Anthony just said. I mean, it's agreeable that we're not having conversations anymore. There's a lot of conflict going on. The electric, everyone's all worked up about the election. But when Anthony was talking about going into relationships with the baggage and everything, a lot of times when I have conversations with other people, they're like, I don't understand what's wrong. I met another, you know, idiot or another jerk or whatever. And I'm thinking, you're the common denominator in all of these relationships. So you keep going through all these people and yet you're not, you know, fixing any of your stuff. You're going in just, you know, you're bailing on the previous thing, not having any personal time to have closure on anything. And then you jump into the next relationship and then you wonder why it's all messed up. And I'm like, you're the common denominator. Usually they stop talking to me after I say that and point that out. So, but when Anthony did it, I'm like, oh, Anthony.
It sounds good when Anthony said it, I guess.
Yeah, he said it way better than me. I usually say it like in the tough love, but at the same time eating ice cream with whoever I'm talking with, you know, so that, you know, it's the, and then yeah, that's the last time I get invited to eat ice cream with them. And because they want to have a pity party and, you know, slam all men and so forth. And I'm just not on that train. I just, you know, I guess I have more personal growth than them. So I know that I have baggage. And so I'm still working on all of it.
What are some of the things that someone can do to work on their own personal baggage?
One of my mentors, he says he lives every 10 minutes is a new day. So whatever happened within 10 minutes happened yesterday. So that's how he verbalizes how to get rid of the baggage. Because if I did it 10 minutes ago, it's no relevant to what I'm doing right now, unless it's something to move me forward.
Mm-hmm. How does, but I agree with that, because I've heard that as well, that you break your day, your 24 hours into 20 minute increments. So it's easier for you to, like you said, let go of those as opposed to just saying, you know, 24 hours ago or 48 hours ago. But what are some of the things that you can do if you would like to improve yourself personally? What does that look like before getting into a new relationship? Because one of the things that you mentioned is this relationship is new for you. So what do you have to do to prepare?
Let's see, what did I do to prepare was, one, when I walked away from my marriage, which was horrible on both sides, I decided I wasn't dating. I didn't want anyone. I wasn't going to look for anyone else. I was going to concentrate on me, doing what I wanted to be physically fit, to be mentally fit, to concentrate on my business and my daughter. I didn't look actively for a relationship. I wasn't looking for a friend. It was just a work connection. And we started talking work, and then we went from work into friendly conversation, and it evolved naturally. Nothing's been pressed because they weren't looking for a relationship either.
Mm-hmm. I think that's wonderful. I think Amy, I want to talk to Amy real quick. A lot of times we put a lot of pressure on ourselves to have the perfect life, to have, you know, maybe we have a lot of regrets. So, you know, maybe it's that high school football player who always thought that he was going to be in the NFL. And now he's looking at his life and he sells shoes at the shoe store. You know, it's like that adds a lot of pressure on us and makes us believe that life should be or could be different. What are your thoughts, Amy?
And that was a great example, because I mean, honestly, you know, selling shoes is honest work. Mm-hmm. So like, there's a lot of shame around some things that doesn't absolutely need to be there. So what's so terrible about selling shoes? It might not be what you want for your life. And it's totally okay to progress, but also, you know, to recognize that you're doing a good job at being where you're at. And I really sympathize with what Allison was saying about, like, you know, people are just sitting there, you know, complaining, blaming everybody else, blaming men for the relationship problems. But sometimes for somebody to change, they first have to believe that they genuinely are okay the way they are, and they can want to be different. And that doesn't mean they're not gonna improve their life, but shame, the belief that you're not okay, is a lot more likely to hold you back. So like, as a therapist, sometimes one of the most important parts of my job is always just to listen, to validate, to make that person feel like they are okay they're a worthwhile human being the way they are and develop their ability to believe that about themselves before any real change can happen.
Mm-hmm. I think that was an excellent point. You know, it's an honest living. There was the actor a few months ago who was on the Cosby Show, and someone saw him. He was working at Trader Joe's, and they took a picture of him and shamed him basically on social media. And then he got a call for like this big role because they noticed him, but he was, you know, he was on the Cosby Show, but people were like, wow, you used to be here and now you're down here. And they try to shame other people, but guess what? Now his career took off because somebody tried to make him feel bad for working at Trader Joe's. And that's what everyone said. It's an honest living. You know what I mean? I believe, you know, because I'm a shopper. Allison knows me. Like, I'm always talking about all these little things I purchased. I posted my green screen. And I always tell people, as long as you earn an honest living, I really believe you should be able to have whatever it is that you want to have. That's my thoughts on it.
Exactly. I have a friend that was a professional football player. He walked away from the contract. Everyone shamed him for walking away, but he decided he wanted to go coach kids instead. He wanted to go to the high school and to the college level and coach the kids. He didn't want to be the NFL player in front of millions of people playing a game when he can touch the lives of a few hundred kids and actually get them to get their life straight.
I think that's beautiful. I really do. I think there's a lot of honor in that.
Sharif, I actually have a fantastic story about exactly what we're talking about. When I, back probably about 15 years ago, when I first started training basketball players, I had a young man come over, and he came over from Africa. Strictly his goal was to go to the NBA. His name was Julian Bendicke. And I started working with him, with my mentor, in his mind, about his body, about his skills. He got really good as a basketball player. He worked his tail off. He wound up going to college down in Florida for a while. I think it was Globe College, if I'm not mistaken. He did okay. He didn't do great. Then he wound up hurting his knee. Now, he was coming back, and he had some people looking at him possibly to go overseas. But he said, you know what? He goes, I don't feel the drive and the passion to do it. So I'm not going to do it. So now he could have went back home to Africa and said, hey, you know, he probably would have been a hero. Like, oh, you know, you did this. Great. But he said, no, he goes, I want more out of life. He said, so what he did was he busted his butt in the classroom just as hard as he worked in the gym. And now he's a microbiologist for Keurig Dr. Pepper. And he calls me Yoda. he's like, Yoda, he goes, you have no idea what I have done without you. He goes, every time I think about it, you know, you always pushed me in the right direction about life, not just basketball. Because there were times we would just be training basketball and I would stop and talk to him for 15, 20 minutes. And this were all the kids. That's what pushed me to the personal development area more so. But he started understanding. So he took what I taught him on the court about basketball and put it into his life outside of basketball. So for me, that was better for me than, you know, 10 kids going to the pros, to the NBA, and to the Hall of Fame, because it showed me that what I was teaching him really got inside of him, as opposed to just helping him get to basketball greatness.
I think that's beautiful. I think we need more teachers like you.
You ain't kidding.
We do, because teachers have to care. You know what I mean? I really think that you have to care about them as a person, as an individual, and not just a number in a class. So I think that that's wonderful that you took the time out, because sometimes it's those little conversations. Like I was talking about my coach, he obviously probably doesn't remember these little things that he says, but I'm 44 years old and I still remember that to this day, that I'm not in competition with anyone else. I'm only in competition with myself, but I still have to be the best me that I can be.
Mm-hmm. Of course. And that's what it boils down to. That's why, like, when we're all speaking about how the people are, you know, getting upset and trying to tear each other down. And a friend of mine who's a principal for an elementary school, we always have conversations about these kinds of things. And we came to this conclusion that two of my favorite athletes of all time, number one is Derek Jeter, and number two is Eli Manning. Because to me, they exemplified what a pro athlete should be. Because you never heard about Derek Jeter talking bad about people. You never heard about Eli Manning talking bad about people. Even like, you know, God rest his soul, Kobe Bryant. You know, for all the things he went through, he came back stronger. And you never heard him talk about how great he was or what he did and how bad other players were. He would talk trash on the court because, you know, one of my speeches for my Toastmasters was, you know, you can't hold me. It was about me talking trash on the court because that's what I did. But that's okay. But when you're genuinely talking bad about people, you know, or having to promote yourself and say like, well, I like the one thing, I'm not a big fan of LeBron James because he's always looking for the people to say you're the best. And when, if you have to tell people to tell you you're the best, then what is that saying about you? You're not happy with who you are. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not comfortable in your own skin. You know, I heard a great quote years ago. You have to be comfortable with being uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. Because that's where the growth happens. It doesn't happen when everything is going great. You know, winning is not a great teacher. It's when you're losing, when you hit that rock bottom, like Michael Jordan. You know, he got cut from his high school basketball team as a sophomore. He was crying in his room, and he could have had the pity party like we spoke about, and then go backwards, and then went, you know, just worked in a local gas station like he spoke about. But no, he said, you know what? He goes, I'm going to prove to myself, I'm going to prove to the coach, and I'm going to prove to everybody else that I should have been on the team. And like they say, the rest is history. Mm-hmm. But that's what it's about. It's about proving it to yourself. It's about not giving up and getting up, understanding that you're going to fail over and over and over again, and that's when you're going to become successful. You know, they say the overnight success. There's no overnight success. They don't see the 15, 20 years of the work that you've been putting in to get to where you want to go. But everyone doesn't feel good about themselves, and when they don't feel good about themselves, it's the crab in the barrel mentality. As one crab gets out, they try to pull them down because they don't want to feel better. The better you do, the worse they look. And a lot of times, unfortunately, it's family members and close friends.
Yes. When I published my first book, I had my family tell me, because it was an indie publisher, small press, you're not an author.
Oh, they need to join us in the 21st century.
That is coming from family. When I published my third book, you're still not an author. You're not a bestseller, therefore you're not an author. Do you understand there's 10 to 20 years that these bestsellers that we're seeing, it takes them to get that one book, mm-hmm. that one multi-million dollar book. Mm-hmm. It's not an overnight success. There is no such thing, not in the publishing world, not in the political world, not in the entertainment world. It nope. doesn't happen overnight.
But never. Just listening to what you said, Melissa, to me, I agree with you, the whole aspect of overnight success. But I will also, just listening to what you said about no matter how many books you published, in their mind, you're not an author. So to me, that would go more to how they view you or and how they view what you're doing and not them not really trying to prop you up and support you and give you the accolades you need. So they're just moving the bar and saying, you know, you're not there yet, because if you were there, you would be a best-selling author. Okay, if you were there, you know, if you sell, there's a meme that goes out that says some people would say if they saw Jesus walking on water, he was walking on water because he couldn't swim. Like, people will always justify in their mind some reason right. why, no matter what you're doing, that's great, that, you know, it's because of this reason. I always talk about, I built my first website in 1994, and people now look and go, oh my God, wow, that's amazing. But in 1994, when I wanted to be a stay-at-home mom to watch my children take their first steps and say their first words, people said I was lazy. They had mm-hmm. no understanding of the world we live in today, which is working virtually. So mm-hmm. in their minds, where if you didn't leave the house, no matter if you made $1 billion or not, it didn't matter, because you weren't leaving the house, you were lazy. You didn't want to get a job. You don't want to work because you're not leaving the house. So it's just a view on how people see what you're doing in a way that they may use to minimize you.
Yes.
So, I heard a good quote too, guys, that it's this. Most people, when they say something about you or say something about someone else, they're projecting what they feel about themselves inside. They mm-hmm. couldn't see themselves being an author, Melissa. They couldn't see themselves putting in the time and effort that you did to write not only one, but two, but three books. That takes a lot of work, you know, and people don't more. They say, who said it? They said that the Marines, they said, everybody wants to go to heaven, but nobody wants to die. Right. They want to be a bestseller. Who wouldn't want a book that's a bestseller? But they're not willing to put in the work. Why? Because they don't believe in themselves. They're not grateful for what they have. And they don't desire more because they don't think they can get it. So what do? They knock you down and they knock other people down and say, oh, well, he can't do it. You know, someone makes it as a movie star or entertainer. It's all, oh, well, oh, that one did this, that one did that. They had help over here. They don't look inside of themselves. And that's, you know, I'm sure, Amy, you know, people don't care about, they don't care enough about themselves. So how can they care about you? If they're not willing to do stuff for themselves, how are they going to care about you? You know, my grandmother used to always say, no one's going to tell you, you know, wash your face, you're going to look better than me. No one's going to admit that you're doing better because it makes them look worse. So that's really what it boils down to. When they knock you, it's because of who they are, not who you are.
Right. Yeah, I know it's like, oh, sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead, Amy, it's okay.
Yeah, I was just going to throw in, like, when I finished the doctorate, you know, I got some negative reactions from people. A lot of them were just passing. They were worried that I was going to kind of, you know, start acting better than people. And when they realized that wasn't going to happen, it was okay. But there's definitely, you know, as much as, you know, I had a lot of good reactions from people, there were a lot of people who were suddenly very uncomfortable with that. And, you know, some of them never quite sorted it out. You know, to speak to what you said about family, like there was a family reunion like 5 days after I finished it. And like, there's a party for somebody's engagement. There's a party for somebody's 8-year-old's birthday party. There's a party for something else, which is totally fine. Like not one word publicly said about what had just happened with me. Like a couple people taking me aside to say, oh, congratulations. But it was very distinctly not mentioned.
I want to hug you, Amy. Like right now, I literally want to send you a virtual hug. Because even I mean, I'm telling you, we're looking at you. I can see the pain in your face. I can see the pain in your eyes. You know what I mean? And it's like one of the things that you started with is saying that some people may have thought that you would start acting like you were better than them. But I'm like, what does that even mean? You know, people always try to say you think like, because people have told me, I think I'm better than them. I don't think I'm better than people. I think I'm being the best me that I can be. And then they look at me and go, you know what? She's doing better than me. You know, so it's the way they perceive it, not the way I perceive it. So I think that that's horrible that they couldn't be happy for you.
Exactly. I mean, when I had my first fan encounter, which it was, I was at dinner with my family and it was so surreal in the moment, but looking back, it's hilarious. The one waitress found out I was in the restaurant just by my name, I guess, and she came out running from the back, waving her arms and had to give me a hug. I'm like, that made me feel so good. But then you have the family element that was so mad because it ruined the family dinner. I'm like, no, it didn't. You have to be happy that these people are happy. You could be happy for me that, hey, my book's getting recognized. You could be happy about anything. You could, happiness is contagious. A smile is contagious. So why isn't their smile contagious in this family dinner?
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. I agree. Because Allison Allman, her smile is contagious. That's why I love when she's here with me on Mondays, because she always makes me smile, makes the day much brighter. Allison, no response. I can't poke you today.
Oh, no, I just... back with more talk about the family. My family is super toxic, so I don't do a lot of association with my family, but it is a common thought, I guess, within my family that I'm not a home organizer. I'm a housekeeper that does laundry. And as a result, I don't know anything about organizing. I don't know anything about packing and unpacking. I don't know anything about decluttering to get a house ready on the market. My brother, He was moving a couple of years ago, and people pay me thousands of dollars to pack them up and unpack them. And he comes along and says, I need help packing my house. You know, can I get on your calendar? And I go, no, I'm totally booked up. It's Christmas. Everyone's already paid for the month. And I'm actually moving this huge house from one part of Newport to another part. And so he goes, so I can't get on your calendar? I'm like, no. And especially if you don't want to pay me, like I can't bump my paying clients for family. So I happened to get a couple of days off from my client. She pretty much had booked the whole month with me. And I get over and I'm packing up his stuff and I'm doing stuff. And he comes along and says, I don't think you understand. I'm moving in 4 days. I'm like, yeah, this is the prime time to pack. This is what, you know, this is what I do is I come in that last week and I pack everything and everything. So then he goes, I don't get it. How do you don't understand. I'm moving. And I'm like, people pay me thousands of dollars to pack and move them. I totally know what I'm doing at your house. 3 days is more than enough to pack up your 6-bedroom house. And he goes, well, what do you know? You're just a housekeeper that does laundry. And I go, I just started laughing at him. I was like, where did you get that notion? It was, oh, that's what mom says. That's what mom tells everyone in the family. I'm like, you don't go to my website? You don't go to Yelp? You don't Google me? And this was like 4 years ago before I did any of the marketing. I just was like an underground known word of mouth person. And so I mean, I had a website and I had Yelp and everything, but I wasn't well known like how I am now. And so then I said, fine, you got this. I'm out of here. I'm going back to my paying client. And I walked out the door and really haven't talked to him since. He did happen to give me $40 and a little note of thank you for your time. $40 doesn't pay for anything with my clients like that. So, and that's pretty much it. And my mom is still telling everyone in the family that I'm a housekeeper at Does Laundry. And I'm going to be on TV in 2 weeks.
You're going to be on TV.
Yep, I'm going to be on CBS LA to show called Destination LA, and they feature local businesses and restaurants and interior designers and just like the best of LA and Orange County. I have told several family members about my air date and they go, oh, that's nice. I don't know if they're turning in.
It doesn't matter when you have a toxic family, what you do. It doesn't matter how many interviews you do, what TV station you're on. It's toxic. It does in their mind that you're still this person that, oh, you're sick if you think you're doing this.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
I wasn't looking for their okay. I just thought it was kind of funny that how many housekeepers that do laundry end up on a TV show, unless they're like in the background of a celebrity show, you know, or something like that. They just don't get highlighted for that. So I just thought it was very funny that they still had their old ideas of me. So I have my few check-ins that I have to do as a family member, like, you know, but I don't, like, I get the emails, texts of what's going on and I don't reply back. And then a couple months go by and then like when my brother will be like, well, why haven't you returned my text? I'm like, sorry, I've been busy. What do you want? You know, what do you need? How can I help you? You're not actively a family member that I associate with. So, you know, what do you need?
See, I've broken it down. I have relatives that don't matter. And then I have family. Family is the ones that I have a connection to, and they don't necessarily have to be a blood relative.
There you go, Melissa. That's exactly 100% accurate. That's the way it is. I can relate to everything you guys are speaking about because within my family, my wife and I, to give a little quick background, what we were trying to adopt a child for over 5 years. And whenever I would go to my family get-togethers, right, a lot of times it would be people that were complaining about their family, complaining about their kids, complaining about their, you know, their children, about how they're not doing this or doing that. Now, mind you, my wife and I are sitting here trying to adopt a child. So what do they say as an adult, a respectful adult? What do you do? Rather than say something and get into an argument, you remove yourself from the situation. And that's where it comes into where everyone was saying, oh, you think you're better than me. You think you're better than us. Oh, because you're not interacting. We don't have anything in common with what you're saying. So what would you like us to do? Not once did anyone ever ask us, oh, you know, what can we do to help? You know, we had a website. We had cards made up, you know, and no one ever offered to say, hey, listen, what can I do to help out? You know, what can I do? Never. And it's like, you want me to go down to your level and to communicate with your people, but you're not willing to see what you can do to help. More people don't want to help. They want you to help them. That's because it goes back to them not feeling good about themselves. It goes back to them not being grateful for what they have. And it goes into everything. So the foundation of your life, you need to be who you are. You need to be comfortable about who you are, what you're about. And then you can go out and go into the world. And like what you just said, Liz, it's not, I have my wife and I's family, we have our family, her sisters, she's close with, like you wouldn't believe. They live in Florida and they can, you know, take the kids, do whatever they want to do, and that's it. Our close friends up here are like our family. You know, my family lives about 40 minutes away. Don't even really talk to them ever. Why? Because why do you want, you don't want to bring that toxicity into your life. You want to be able to, you know, they say you give what you have inside of you. Why would you want to invite that into your life when all you know it's going to cause is heartache? You know, my son now is going to be 7 in less than a month. And can I tell you, my wife's sisters from Florida have come up here and we went down there and seen my son more than my family has. It's mind-blowing. It's mind blowing. But that comes down. I don't, you know, when they say, oh, well, you think you're better than us. You don't think you're better than someone else per se. But in the same breath, don't we all try to do the best we can be? And yes. You want to do best and be who you are, be the best you can possibly be. Yes. You know, if you're not, you know, you're not, like you said before, but your coach said, you're not in competition with anyone else. You're in competition with you. You're your only competition. And that's what they don't understand. Everyone, but again, it goes back to the way they feel. They have to go back and, oh, well, he thinks he's better than us or she thinks she's better than us. It's not about that. That's on them. I've learned to grasp the concept that's on you. If that's what you want to think, that's on you. I'm not getting into that because it's not about that.
Yes, I definitely agree. One of the things that I always talk about is how you can I love everyone. I love everyone in my family. I've just learned to love some of them from a distance. I have truly enjoyed today's show, and I always talk about this every show. That's why I love doing what I do. I love doing this show because we never know where the conversation is going to go. An hour later, we've had the best conversation I've had in a long time, and that's what happened here today. We always see a common theme, and we've all dealt with these situations with our family and with other people. And so it helps for us to share it together. Now we are coming down to the last few minutes of the show. And what I love to do at the end of every show is just simply allow my guests the opportunity to speak directly to the audience, to everyone who is watching this show live, as well as everyone who is watching it in the archives. And simply let them know what you want them to take away from your appearance here today. And we're going to start with you, Melissa.
Well, I do a little bit of self-help. Talk to a lot of authors, self-help motivators on my own podcast, which you can find on YouTube. Generally, it goes to radio stations and everything else. But you can find all the archives on YouTube, and you can just find that under ML Loosetrock, my last name. But also, if you want to find my fantasy books, you can go over to Trient, T-R-I-E-N-T. Press.com. They are the traditional publisher I'm now with. And if they're an author, there's a lot of mentoring that can be done because there's nothing that happens overnight. It takes a village to promote you.
And where should they go if they want more information?
Treantpress.com.
Absolutely. Amy, what do you have for us?
Okay. So the biggest thing to take away is, you know, the importance of community in your life, of family, you know, however you define that, whoever's your real family that supports you. My parents and my older brother are fantastic. There are a lot of other family members, as some of you have said, I love from afar. So I actually wrote a book on how to help families support a family member with disorder, which is a brutally hard road for the whole family. And I say that a couple of times in here. You know, when I'm talking about family, that may be your biological family, it might not. So that is probably one of the most underestimated aspects of, you know, mental health and good relationships is, you know, like the others have been saying, Tony and Melissa, you know, who's your real family, who really supports you? Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's necessary to keep some people at a distance, even when they're biologically closer to you.
Absolutely. What's the name of your book and where can we pick it up?
Understanding Bipolar Disorder, The Essential Family Guide. It's on Amazon. It's on Barnes & Noble. If you want to support a smaller local bookstore, it's on a website called Bookshop that shares the financial stream with smaller local bookstores. Mm-hmm. Okay. Pretty available.
Thank you. Allison, what do you have for us?
Okay, well, this was another great Monday. I'm so excited and pumped up for my week. I'm in the middle of decluttering a house to get it on the market. It's going to be on the market soon. And so I'm just every day I'm decluttering it. So I'm always looking to help people in Southern California where they feel overwhelmed or anxious or they're just too busy, which sounds almost silly to say because of the pandemic. But there's quite a few people that are getting back into their lives. Their kids are going back to school and they just don't have any time to organize before the holidays or get all the decor out. The best way to get in contact with me is to search the organization Maven. If you make it as the at signed, the organization Maven, all my social media handles will come up with how to contact me, how to see my before and after pictures, see my reviews, see my blog. I mean, I just kind of have all these different social media outlets. That's the best way to get a hold of me. And I just look forward to next week.
Yes. Anthony, what do you have for us?
I've enjoyed this. I mean, honestly, I didn't know how it was going to go, and this has been fantastic. I mean, I feel like I've learned more in the last hour than I've learned in the last like 5 years. No joke. I mean, thank you guys so much for everything you've contributed. It's been amazing. For me, I mean, my thing is just love yourself, love who you are, love what your life is, because, you know, people's lives get taken in the blink of an eye, and we're not appreciating what we have. You know, my biggest thing is if we can work with the kids and get the kids with the right mindset now, that you get rid of the bullying, you get rid of the racism, you get rid of the controversy that's constantly with these kids, especially online. When I hear a kid commits suicide or is going crazy and getting upset because of people, not enough likes or people bullying them online, here's an idea. Shut the computer. Turn off your phone. Don't go on. And that's what the kids aren't being taught. They're not being taught about themselves. Everyone's telling them what they can't do. How about what you can do? Focus on your strengths, not your weaknesses. And then your weaknesses become smaller. I mean, that's really what it boils down to. Follow your GPS, like I said. And it's very simple.
And where can we pick up a copy of your book?
The book, like I said, is called Go Prove Something. And it's a basketball player's guide to legally using PEDs, with PED standing for performance enhancing decisions. Mm-hmm. You know, every decision we make is either going to bring us higher or bring us lower. You can pick it up anywhere, Amazon, BarnesandNobles.com, wherever you can get it. My website is my name, Anthony M. Drago, so AnthonyMDrago.com. And all my information is there. You can get in touch with me, very simple.
Yes, I want to thank you all for being a guest on today's episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I also want to thank everyone who tuned in to watch the show live, as well as everyone who is watching the show from the archives. We definitely appreciate you, and we still need your support. Please go ahead and share the show. And also, we invite you to visit our guests, check out their websites, follow them on social media, send them a message. And when you contact them, please let them know Sharifa Hardy says hi. And if you're interested in more ways that I can help your business, or maybe you want to pick up your tickets to December 29th and December 30th, New Year, New You, two-day teleconference, or maybe you want to be a guest on the Roundtable Talk Show, visit the website at asksharifa.com. Until next time, everyone have a safe and a blessed day. Bye now.
Thanks, Sharifa.
Struggling to increase your sales or website conversions? Are you looking for new ways to promote your business through social media or any other campaign? If yes, then you're at the right place. Ask Sharifa has 25 years of experience and the track record to guide you to success. From business planning to social media marketing, from website designing to website development, from search engine optimization to paid traffic, we will research your business, your products and/or services, and the competition to develop a custom growth strategy for your business. Contact us now, and we will help you bring your business growth to the next level. For more information, visit www.asksharifa.com.